Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
Morning.
Good morning. Who do we have online?
Josh.
Hey, Josh, long time. How you been?
Hey, all right. How are you?
Good. And who was it? Rivka's there?
I'm here. I'm here. With my cold.
Oh, you got a cold.
Oh, yeah.
And who else is there?
Carolyn.
Hey, Carolyn.
Hi.
What about Francesca, Doug, Cal? Are they on? Jim?
I'm here.
Hey, Jim.
I'm here.
I just wait a minute for Cal and Doug and Francesca. You can take a look at what we're doing today. It's continuing Koheles. We're in chapter 7. And we're going to do verses 21 and 22.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Which book are we in?
Koheles, Ecclesiastes.
Oh, okay, great.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Hey, Doug, how are you?
Yeah, good morning, Doug.
Okay, how are you?
Hi.
Is Francesca joining us, Doug? Do you know of him?
I do not know. Okay.
Okay, so let's get started. Okay, so we're up to verse... chapter 7, verse 21. So we set up to here. We set up to here is that King Solomon was advising the person how not to be too much of an extremist in any area, whether it's even, you know, whether it's, of course, living emotionally, you know, foolishly, or even too much involved in wisdom without taking care of a person's needs is also an incorrect approach. And he said that a person has to grab onto both. That was what he said in verse 18. And he stated there, because the person who fears God will be successful in all areas. Yetzeh es kulam, will bring out the best in all areas. And we underlined that word, that he fears God. Why does he mention that in verse 18 that he fears God? Because he's not working on his own assessment. He's trusting God's approach, and as taught through the Torah, and he realized that that is the that must be the most intelligent approach, because God knows all the factors and what the right measurement should be in our involvement in all areas. But then we've said again the reason why he goes back in 19, and then he says that wisdom gives strength to the wise man. So there it's because the person may feel that each element in our life has equal weight. So King Solomon wants to make sure he doesn't give that impression. So he says, no, wisdom is always superior than anything else. It's just that the extremism has to be something which a person is not involved in. That applies equally to everything. You don't give extremism to anything. But there is something which should be guiding your life and all, always, and that should be wisdom. So don't think that that's just an equal portion in life. Wisdom has to always be present. Okay, and then as the Blue Sforno, who said the next verse, let me just see if that was Sforno or Ibn Ezra. I think it's not maybe Ibn Ezra, where it says the next verse, 20, which states, For man is not completely righteous in the land that he does good and he never sins. What is he bringing that in for now? To say, because. So that must be related to the theme. You can't start off a verse with just, you know, the word because as being a new area. So Ibn Ezra is the one who explains it. He says as follows. He says that King Solomon now returns to the matter. And he returns and explains that the person should not be too, don't be too righteous. And he goes back to the previous statement in 16, where he states that, don't be too righteous. But now he gives the support for it, because it's impossible. There's no man that can be completely righteous and never sin. So he's trying to explain to the person that to have this type of extremism is impossible. That's another aspect. Not only does it work, meaning if you're just involved in wisdom and study all the time and you don't take care of your physical needs, you don't work, and you just have this type of highfalutin, you know, egocentric view of the self, where I'm just a thinker and I'm involved in thought all the time, well, you're going to die if you don't take care of your physical needs. So that's practically what he says earlier. But now he tells you just in terms of the realm of possibility, it's impossible. And he explains why. And he says, because there's no man that does not sin in action or in speech or in thought. Again, action, speech, and thought are the three areas, the only three areas that man can be involved in. Man can only be involved in either a thought or a verbalization or a physical action. There is nothing else we can do. And if you take a look at the Ten Commandments, it's very interesting how they are broken up. As we say, the Ten Commandments, the first five are between man and God, and the second five are between man and man. But not only that, the order of the commandments is brilliant. That if you take a look in terms of man's the laws of the Ten Commandments between man and God. So the first thing is that you shouldn't, that you must accept God. So that's a thought. That's a command dealing with your thinking. The next one is that you should accept other gods. That's also thinking. Then it says you shouldn't swear falsely in God's name. You shouldn't use God's name in vain. So that's speech. And then you have keeping the Sabbath and honoring parents. And those are both action. So it goes thought, which is first accepting God and rejecting idolatry. Speech is not using God's name in vain. And then action is the Sabbath and honoring parents. But the last five, the second set, the laws between man and man, they go just the opposite. You shouldn't kill. You shouldn't commit adultery. And you shouldn't kidnap. That's all action. Action is being mentioned first. Then it says, don't testify falsely. That's verbal, that's speech. And the last, in the second set of the laws between man and man, is you shouldn't covet, you shouldn't desire. That's thought. So isn't that amazing how the commands and the Ten Commandments, they're set up in an opposite order? But why is that? Why do you think that is? That the laws between man and God start off with thought, then go to speech, then progress to action. Whereas the laws between man and man are the opposite. They start off with action, then progress to speech, and then the final one is thought. Why is it reversed when you're dealing with the laws between man and man as opposed to the laws between man and God?
Rabbi, is it because man in the physical world tends to act first and then think about it later?
Maybe. Let me just also ask and get some feedback, some background noise. Unless you're speaking, so please put on the mute. That'd be appreciated if you have a mute button. So you're saying just in terms of that would be saying that the system that God gave in the Ten Commandments are parallel with man's error. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't say that. I would say it's a perfection in terms of the design of the order. It wouldn't be paralleling an error.
Well, okay. In that case, then, how about in terms of terms of the ease with which man can do something about it. So God's saying, okay, first do the easy thing, which is your actions. The second is to slow down your speech, and the most difficult of all is to control your thoughts.
So he's telling you to do things easy first? What's the idea behind that?
Get quick wins. Now I see your point. That doesn't seem like it works.
Everybody sees the question, though, right? Yeah, so I think what's going on is that the relationship between man and God is something which primarily is based on thought, then speech and action, whereas man's relationship with man is a physical relationship more than it is what he thinks about it, meaning that what I do to man is more primary in that relationship since it is a physical relationship. The greatest harm is murder, than adultery, than kidnapping. A less harm is what I say, and an even lesser harm is what I think about man, because that's not the arena in which the relationship exists. The arena, the realm, the sphere of relationship between men is a physical realm, whereas the relationship between man and God is as concepts of God. So it's less important what you do in action or speech in terms of your relationship with God than what you think. If your concept of God is completely wrong, your actions cannot compensate. And then conversely, if your thoughts concerning what God is and your notions about his providence and how it relates to man, if that is something which is correct, so then your actions are less consequential. Just provided I have the right ideas, so sometimes it may be I may foul up sometimes, I may sin, I may carry on the Sabbath, I'm not allowed to carry, I'm not allowed to do labor, but that's less important than the fact that I have the right idea of God. But if I think God is physical, and I never break the Sabbath, well, my life is useless. My life is a waste, because my concept of God was completely off. So everything I studied in life was really based on a completely false notion of God. It didn't reflect anything true about the Creator. All the studies that I had, it did not does not reflect any truth, because I think the Creator is a man. So you see why the way God ordered the commandments is in terms of what the priority is and importance, depending on the relationship. All right, everybody see it?
Okay.
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah, isn't it usually first the thought, then the thought comes first, then the action, and then once the action occurs, then the speech is the last thing. So if the thoughts are not in order, isn't that the first thing that goes wrong? If we're not thinking properly, we'll eventually carry out the thoughts by acting them out.
That's true, but the commandments are not being ordered in terms of the error of man, but in terms of what they're supposed to be teaching us lessons, not showing us our mistakes. That's what's telling Doug.
Okay.
So there has to be a lesson to the order. An order means to say that, what does the word order mean? Think about the word order.
Order? The way we conduct ourselves.
No, that's in terms of your actions. I mean, if you have a list, and you put
yes.
certain things at the top of the list and certain things at the bottom, you're saying what is primary.
Right.
An order means to say, to give precedence to things because of their greater consideration, the greater good.
Okay.
The greater importance.
Right. Okay.
All right, so that's what the order is here. There's a more importance in terms of the laws that come first.
Okay.
All right, similarly, the Torah commences with the concept of a creator. Not because creation took place first, but because that's primary in terms of our understanding of God and our whole purpose in existence.
Okay.
All right, so Ibn Ezra was saying over here that since we're talking about the area that the person should not give vent to extremism wherever it is, and then he says in 16 that you shouldn't do it because it just won't be productive. You'll perish if you're involved in wisdom as an extreme activity. If that's the totality of your expenditure of time and you're not earning any money, you're not working to, again, if somebody could put a mute button on, they get a lot of feedback.
Someone has small children in the background, that's what we're picking up, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just go on. So, the idea first is that, practically, if you give it to extremism, you'll perish because you're just putting in too much time into your work, into your learning, even though it's a great thing, but you need to work too. But then he's also telling you there's no realm of possibility. It's impossible that you'll never sin. And Ibn Ezra continues, and he says that a person, it's impossible that he won't sin in thought or speech or in action. As he writes in the book of Proverbs, that the heart plows up thoughts of sin. Lev choresh machshavos avon, meaning the thought of man is made where we're emotionally driven. I mean, that's something which is a part of our nature until we die. And it's impossible that emotions are not just going to get us to a fantasy state of mind, and we're going to think of something or somebody says something to us, and we're going to think about, you know, retaliating. I mean, their ego is there, and it always has to be restrained. The greatest people, I mean, even Moses, he talked back to the Jews. He called them rebels. So an emotion overtook him, and he hit the rock when he was really supposed to just talk to the rock to bring out the water, and so on. So King Solomon's trying to give you a path of life that's realistic. Don't think you're a saint. We said that last week. We don't have this concept of a saint in the Torah. And that's why we said again that Yom Kippur is fixed in the calendar, because it has to occur every year. We need to have atonement every year because we're just that way, and we have to accept that. We do our best, and hopefully as we progress in life, you know, we sin less, and what we do sin is something which is lesser, and hopefully get to the point where maybe a few years ago where maybe we could even be in control all the time. Right? I mean, a person could definitely have a long duration where he's really in control. And that, of course, is going to be based on how real he sees the value of Torah and how real he sees the damage of sin. So it tells you here, don't have a plan in life where I'm going to be a person that never sins. That's not how you get to the point of not sinning. You get to that point where you see the damage in sin, and also you just don't value anymore. And that moves us on now to the next verse. Now he's going to give us a prescription about how we can now at least try to stay away from sin the most. And what does he say? Okay, so now there's a new verse that we didn't cover yet. Okay, and he says as follows. This is now 7:21, Kehelis. He says, Gam, also. And you see he starts the verse off with the word also. That means it's a continuation of the theme. He says, also, to all things that are spoken, or that they will speak, don't give heart to it. They should not hear your servant cursing you. 22. Because also, many, many times, you know in your own heart that also you cursed others. What is he saying?
He's saying basically don't take anything to heart. It's sometimes people talk and they just think they're letting off steam. But we don't have to take it to heart. Maybe it doesn't really, they really don't mean what they say. They're just acting out their anger.
No, he doesn't say they don't mean it. That's not what the verse says.
No, I know the verse doesn't say that, but I'm just wondering, doesn't that apply usually in life? If people let off anger, they'll say things and they need it at the time, but then they're sorry for it afterwards.
But again, that's not what the verse is. The verse is not focusing on the regret of the people who curse you. What's the verse focusing on? And why does he bring this in? Why specifically this phenomena of not giving heart to when people curse you? And look what he says.
Hello?
Yes.
I think it's saying that we're all kind of the same, that we tend to say things that we don't mean, and so don't take it to heart of what other people say, because each one of us is guilty of the same thing.
You're very nice, but what is he bringing this verse in for? If he was just on the theme of trying to show a person how to live properly, and not to give too much extremism to one area, not to give me be an extremist at all, in truth, and then showing you that even practically you can't be extremely good, because there's nobody who's completely righteous on earth. And the reason why he says that there's no one righteous on earth is because it's the earthly existence that causes us to sin. We didn't say that before, but at least we should understand it. But if he's telling us that as a guide not to sin, and now he's continuing, so how does this contribute to us not sinning?
I think it contributes in the way that he says there is no righteous person there. So recognize that other people, as well as ourselves, are not perfect, and that we might say things that we don't mean. So don't take it to heart.
Okay. Is that what you're saying?
Is it also possible, since you're talking about how the verses are saying don't be too righteous, that I guess to Cal's point, this is bringing it back home to you that if you think, you know, you're super righteous, but you hear your servant cursing you, remember that you do all the same things that he does. Trying to bring it back into that balanced place.
Okay.
That's good. I'm making another thing too. I think that Doug is right. I think also maybe we should understand that maybe the servant in this case is saying what they feel, and it is accurate. But we shouldn't take it to heart. And it's.
I mean, you should be forgiving. It sounds like what everybody's saying is that you should be forgiving.
Yeah, you know, shouldn't take it all. We shouldn't say that maybe it's 100% true. It could be true and it could not be true, but for what? Don't let it affect you from what you're doing. Continue to do the right thing in this life. Don't let it set you off your course. In other words, if somebody tries to really aggravate you, they could aggravate you to a point where you are brought down to their level, and now you're not that good person anymore. You have to really remember to conduct yourself the way Hashem wants you to conduct yourself, and not to let all these other things set you off your course.
I agree with all that. The only question I have is, there's many things he can give us advice here about, you know, to be forgiving, this and that, but there has to be a specific reason or some element in this verse that's necessary at this point. So I don't disagree. A person definitely should be forgiving, but that seems just to be like an arbitrary point at this juncture. There has to be a reason why this verse follows, and that's what I'm trying to get to. In terms of him telling you, yeah, go ahead.
How would you explain the thing?
What?
How would you explain it, Rabbi?
I can't hear you.
How would you explain it? How could you clarify this?
So So what I would suggest is that if he's telling us, I mean, again, the theme is that he's trying to show a person the right path, not to go into extremism, and don't think he can just be totally righteous. So now the next step is going to be, how does a person, even though he's telling you not to, don't try to, you know, paint this picture yourself that you're completely righteous without sin. That doesn't mean, you know, give up the approach. I mean, a person must still, nonetheless, stay on track to do what he can not to sin. Keep in mind that you're not trying to, you know, be a saint. That's going to be a downfall, because that's impossible. But that does not mean, well, because again, sometimes people will say, well, if I can't do it this extreme, so the very extremism that the person is wishing for, that King Solomon says, no, don't try to be a saint. See, that's why he tells you, verse 20, he says, don't try to be a saint. Now, if that's part of our nature, is to try to have this 100% pristine picture of ourselves, so then a lot of times what people do, because of their extremism, what's the natural thing that they're going to do as a result?
It's going to retaliate.
No, what?
They'll retaliate.
No, not retaliate. They'll go to the other extreme. They'll express their extremism again, because they don't really get the lesson. What the person will do is that if you're telling me, and since a person wants extremism, that's something which is comfortable for a person because it fits an image. That's something they can identify with. It's less abstract. That's why you have very, you know, there are many Jewish groups where there has to be an externalism of what they feel is piety in terms of clothing and so on and so forth, or actions that they do. Because the person is looking for, you know, or the people that are monks, that also satisfies extremism. There's an image, there I am. And if a person breaks a little bit, they're like devastated because they couldn't keep up with that image, which was impossible. So King Solomon says, first of all, you can't be that saint. It's just impossible humanly. But what may happen now is that a person will say, well, forget it, I'll give up the whole system. And if I can't get it all, it's all or nothing. But that's extremism too. So therefore he responds with 21. And he says, he tries to keep a person on track. It's true that you can't do everything, but that doesn't mean you give up. It's not all or nothing. And therefore he gives you advice. But the first piece of advice he gives you in terms of staying on the right track in life is in the social realm. And he says, to all the things that are spoken, don't give you a heart. And don't listen to you, that you shouldn't hear your servant cursing you. It's two parts to the verse. First part, he's telling you right away about all the things that are spoken. Spoken means that a person is concerned about what others say. That's the social. He's trying to show you that the first thing to do, if you really want to live properly, is you have to remove yourself from seeking approval from others or seeking a position in your mind. How do I fit in with Bob, my next door neighbor? How do the people at Temple view me? How do my friends at work view me? If that's your barometer, so now you're just going to be very, very emotionally driven just to gain approval. And that, he's saying, is the first thing you have to remove from, because that's not attachment to truth, that's attachment to people. So that's the first thing he does. He says, in terms of keeping you on the right track, it's true you can't be a saint, but also don't go to the other extreme and just give it up. You could still do a tremendous amount, and you have to start somewhere. But one of the most powerful motivations in a person for sin is going to be in the realm of the social. All right, so that's why he's talking about speech, because that's the primary tie between people. All right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay. And then he says in the same verse, don't give heart, meaning this should not be concerned what people say. That is not the realm of reality. Reality is really something which the Torah tells you. What is true from God, not what man says or does. Okay? But then he says, in order that you shouldn't hear your own servant cursing you. Why does he bring in servant and cursing? Think about that for a minute.
Well, Rabbi, I
think it makes sense. Wait. Let's give everybody a chance to think about it.
Okay.
Rivka, go ahead.
Yes. What I'm going to say is that the servant is with you in all ways. He sees your pluses and minuses, and he sees exactly how you behave with people, how you behave when you're by yourself. He sees your true self. There's nothing hidden. So don't let your servant curse you. Is that you shouldn't, you should try to control yourself in a way that even your servant shouldn't see the bad points. You shouldn't have those bad points. You should be in control. There's nothing that the servant can really see that he can say against you. You should always be in control of yourself, disciplined.
Well, he's not telling you don't do things that will cause your servant to curse you. He says, don't listen, don't give ear to things, because if you do, then you're also going to give ear to your servant cursing you. The verse is not telling you not to do things that will generate a curse in your servant. The verse is telling you that you should, in general, not be concerned about the statement of others, so that if your servant curses you, it shouldn't be bothersome to you. But we're asking, why is that? So, you understand now?
Yeah, it should just roll off your back. It shouldn't hit at the heart. But the thing that bothers me is that the servant sees everything.
What?
The servant is really seeing you in all ways.
I know, that's true, but that's not the... But he's, again, he's not talking about what the servant sees you. It's talking about the you listening to people's statements and all. Might, if you do that, you'll eventually hear your servant. You'll eventually hear your servant curse you, and that's what you're trying to avoid.
So what are you doing to curse when the servant curses? And it's true.
I can't hear you. What?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So what is it? What do you do if the servant is cursing you and ridiculing you because it's really true?
That's a separate thing.
Okay.
All right, so I think what he's saying over here is that since you're trying to avoid sin, and primarily it's going to be through the social, where is going to be the biggest problem? Is where you're doing good for someone and then he gives you bad in return. So that's going to be the most difficult situation.
Okay.
So he says in general, don't be involved in this and being concerned about speech in order that you're not put to the greatest test where the one who's serving you, you're benefiting, is now going to curse you. I guess that's why I believe he brings in the second part of the verse to just illustrate the best example.
So basically, if the servant is cursing you, you should just remain calm and ignore it.
Yeah, again, and that's what you should do in all cases, correct?
Okay.
The person has to get to the point where he's not concerned about the speech of others.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they know that. Said many years ago, who is happy? He who can ignore. You could ignore, you could remain happy, don't take everything.
Yeah, Ibn Ezra says that.
Yes? Okay.
Yeah, he says if a person wants to find peace of mind, he won't give his heart to the words of people.
There you go, good.
Okay. And he says further, if people do curse you, even your servant. Meaning that's the hardest one to deal with, as we're saying. And Ibn Ezra goes on and he says, and if people do curse you, even your servant, he says, if you give heart to the words, you'll get angry. And then the brightness of your wisdom will become dark in your soul. Meaning it's like a parable, it's a metaphor, that you won't be able to have the clarity of mind to pursue your Torah studies. Because now you're drawn in to the social. And that's basically why Lashon Hara, they say, is the most difficult sin, evil speech, because that's where people really get to vent themselves, and that's where people are concerned with the most. What he said, what she said, people are concerned with the social the most, and that's something which he's telling you over here. It's primary, and that's why that's the first bit of advice in terms of living properly. But look what he does now in the next. Look what he does now in the next verse. He says, and also many times you know yourself in your heart that you cursed others.
Mm.
Okay, let's think about what he's saying now with that. That's a whole verse by itself.
It's just a complete waste of time.
Well, wait, let's give everybody a chance.
Okay.
Again, let me just read it for everybody so you have it. He says, because many times you know in your heart that even you cursed others. Many times he's saying this. Okay, what is he trying to do with that verse? Think about that.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Seems like he's making it an equal playing field.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the sense that we're guilty of the same things that we may see other people doing, so don't take it to heart. Don't put a lot of emphasis on it. We can't use that to make ourselves feel better because we're guilty of the same things.
So what's his point in telling me this verse? What is he trying to do here? What's his objective here?
Perfect.
Well, that we know. He already told us that in the verse 20. There's no man who's righteous in land who does good and never sins. So he's already told us that nobody is perfect. This has to be a new point. And it has to be on the point of cursing, because he's still picking up on the previous verse.
It seems like this is focusing on us instead of the verse before was focusing on those that are close to us, that know us well, may curse us, but this is saying that we also, if we're real honest with ourselves, we do that same thing. So it's turning it around.
So that's a big deal. So I do it too, but I'm still going to retaliate when somebody curses me. Well, what do I care that I do? What do I care that I do? I mean, what is he... What is the underlying principle that King Solomon is exposing here with this statement?
A waste of time.
Many things are a waste of time.
Is he exposing that you are no different than anybody else?
Well, I mean, didn't he say that everybody sins? No man. So everybody's the same already. There's no man that's righteous in the land, that does good and doesn't sin. That would sound repetitive to me.
You know, excuse me, Rabbi, may I just say something?
Yeah.
To me, the whole thing seems like a ping-pong game. It'll continue until one person puts down the paddle. It's using time in a wasteful way, and it means nothing, because tomorrow it'll be forgotten.
But that can apply to any sin. That's not explaining this verse.
I'm sorry, does it say who he curses in his heart?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me. Does it say who he curses in his heart?
I'll read it to you again. No. It just says, for many times you know in your heart that you too cursed others.
It just shows that we're all the same, and one of us has to be strong enough to say, enough is enough.
That's not what the verse says. It doesn't say one of us has to do something.
Why does it distinguish in the case of you having cursed somebody in your heart, but the servants are somebody you're hearing out loud, so why isn't it you have cursed others just out loud. I mean, why in your heart?
No, he's saying you know in your heart that you cursed others. Not that you cursed others in your heart.
Oh, gotcha. I'm sorry, I got that backwards. Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Could it be that, like, the person knows that when they've cursed others, you know, their motivation made them, you know, whatever, they were angry or whatever, but it wasn't, that their own curses weren't necessarily, like, an accurate reflection of reality. So they should, you know, sort of know that when other people curse them too, that it's the same sort of thing, like not to really take it, like, it's that important.
No, person, I'll say the opposite. When I curse somebody else, he really deserves it. It is a real picture of reality.
Yeah, I guess that would be how the person would use, right?
Have to have been a million lost on this one.
Okay.
Could you help us?
So what he's telling you is that you did something too. If we just, you know, distill what his message is. So on the surface, just the literal reading, he's telling you that also you are a victim of this crime too. Okay, fine. And he's trying to give you a reason not to do it. Right, that's his whole point here. Don't give ear to these things. In order that you don't be concerned with speech, in order that you shouldn't be tested by the strongest test, which is hearing somebody who benefits from you, and he's turning around and cursing you. If you, in general, don't give ear to people, and you're not concerned about speech, so then you won't be somebody who's sensitive to even that case. But he also adds one more thing. In terms of trying to assist the person in this. He tells you not to do a certain action, but now he's giving you a certain motivation. And he says that you too did something, meaning to say that a person, the rule that King Solomon is now exposing, which we all know it, and you'll hear it, you'll agree when I say it, is that a person will always want to defend himself, but he can't lie to himself. So to feel justified in retaliating on somebody who cursed you, you can't do if you do the same thing. Right? Just factually. To get a person to the point where they won't be so quick, you know, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Meaning to say that as long as a person feels justified, then he acts. As long as a person feels, then that's how a person always wants to work. Person always has to justify. It's impossible to live otherwise. Rabbi Chaim once explained that. That anytime, even when a crook is stealing something, there's something called the reality principle, and that is that a person will never do anything which he really feels is harmful to the self. If you can show a person something is harmful and he really grasps it, he will not be able to do it. Take the syringe full of poison and stick it in your body. You can't do it. Person can't do it. And the person who does commit suicide is because he's convinced that life is so painful that nothing could be worse than what I have. So there, again, the person is convinced that this is a good. I'm doing something which is a good for me right now. Whatever the twisted thinking of the person is, a person cannot do something if they feel that it is a wrong. It's a bad. Somehow the person has to make it good. Some justification, some rationalization. So that's what he's using here. He's telling you that if you really feel that motivation to retaliate, when you hear somebody talking behind your back, well, and you think that's evil, now he takes the wind out of your sails. He's giving you a motivation and showing you you did this yourself. Now, when a person sees that, so he can't feel it's a negative because he did it too. But I would not say that this is the highest level. King Solomon's not telling you that this is the perfect view that you should have about things. He's giving you an opening based on that you act this way. He's giving you an ability to restrain yourself. And that's done by exposing that flaw in yourself too. And now that I've done that, so if I yell at this guy, I should yell at myself, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to be wrong. Meaning to say, it's not just because you've done something many times, it's wrong. That's not a good argument. If I tell somebody, you've done X so many times, does that mean X is wrong? Because that's what King Solomon is saying over here. He's just saying, you know in your heart that many times you did this act too. Well, maybe I was right. No, he's just trying to show you that if you partook of a certain action, that, and now you see somebody else doing the same thing, that can be a useful tool in terms of holding back for a moment and not just lashing out.
That shows tremendous strength. If you can accept who you are and control it, it's a discipline. Isn't that true?
What you're saying is shows strength? Is that what you said?
Yeah, if a servant is criticizing you for something that you did, and yes, you did it because you're only human and we all do things, and you don't retaliate, and you say to yourself, okay, he's not stupid, he's right, and yet you don't go back and say something to the servant. Well, you know, don't tell me what to do, I'm the boss, and so on and so forth. And you just stand your ground and stay strong and accept the fact that you are who you are and you have made mistakes and still keep your stature. That's a strength, that's a discipline.
Well,
that was what they're saying, what King Solomon is saying.
He's saying that you've done this too. Like,
right.
For example, Sworno says, this is not something fitting that you should get angry about. You've done this too.
Right.
So
right.
That means you'd be accusing yourself. Do you want to accuse yourself of doing something wrong? You're going to have to. If you retaliate when somebody else curses you, then you're really yelling at yourself.
You've brought down to the same level. You're lowering your level. You're not keeping it.
It's not a matter of lowering your level. It's a matter of, you're saying there's a phenomena that if you can see that you've done something as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can't persecute somebody else for doing a wrong because that's something which you share in common too.
Right.
So it's a means by which a person can, it's also a way of stepping out of the self too. Because when a person wants to retaliate, it's because he feels justified. But now King Solomon's taken away your justification. Because you've done it too, so you know, you've yelled at other people also.
Right.
So you must have felt that was right when you did it. Now somebody's doing it to you. So he's now telling you, look at the whole picture, not just your feelings right now as being the recipient of ridicule. One second. You can't just look at something. See, that's another important lesson here, is not to look at something in isolation and assess something on the moment. That's what I say. A wise person is a person who understands the outcome. He doesn't just assess something at the moment. We talked about this months ago in Kohelet.
Okay. Yeah, that's That's a beautiful way of explaining it, right?
Let me see here if Ibn Ezra says on this. Done this. Right. Give me just one second. One second. You see, the person's initial response, of course, is defense of the self. That's why a person wants to retaliate when they've been cursed. Somebody curses me, I got to defend myself. So that's
right. That's a normal reaction, isn't it?
What?
It's a normal reaction.
No, I'm just saying that what's going on is that a person is always, the ego is always at play. And now what King Solomon is telling you is that that might be your initial response. But now look at the fact that there's been many cases where you were on the other side, you know, the tables were turned. So now that could take away the person's conviction that I should retaliate and that's a good thing. No, you've also done an act of cursing. So he's giving you a fuller picture. He's giving you a fuller picture. He's not making an adverse, he's not saying whether cursing is right or wrong. He's just trying to show you in terms of how you operate that don't assess the case initially in just a very isolated instance where something just happened to you. And it could also help you in terms of the control, because now you don't want to point the finger at yourself. Because if a person really wants to feel justified in retaliating, he won't be able to if he realizes that he committed the very crime that he's going to accuse somebody else. So that's what I believe the method that King Solomon is using over here, in order to help a person restrain from sinning by cursing somebody else. Okay?
There's an example that I'd like to offer. May I?
I can't hear you.
There's an example that I'd like to offer.
Yeah.
A lesson to, it came to mind, a lesson to our father trying to train a son, and the son retaliates. You know, don't tell me, you do the same thing. But the father could say in so many words, I know I've done this, and that's why I'm saying it doesn't work, and I'm trying to teach you. In other words, he'll say that he's accepting the fact that he is wrong, or he did something that was wrong. But now, as an adult and a disciplined person, he's saying, because I know it's wrong, I'm telling you not to do it. Not because I'm saying that I'm perfect, but I know it doesn't work. It's like a teaching, it's like a lesson. But he's still maintaining the dignity of the father. It is safe.
Okay.
That just came to my mind.
All right. Okay, any other questions or comments?
So the verse is there to help us not to sin.
Right. Both of the verses.
Okay.
The first verse, 21, is helping you not sin is the first thing. He tries to head off at the pass the social need. That's really where a person's going to sin the most. So that's why he talks about that when he after he finishes telling you don't be an extremist in this area and that area, but don't abandon the system of Torah either. You have to still work on it. And what's the best thing? He gets you on, he tells you right off the bat, the first step, when it comes to the social realm, don't be concerned about speech of other people. And then, in order to assist you in that, he gives you a lesson which will help you restrain yourself. Because the lesson is really that it's true. Initially, you're going to want to retaliate when somebody ridicules you because you want to defend yourself. So he takes away the ability for you to defend yourself by showing you're a victim of this too. If you're going to yell at that other person for getting in your case, then you're going to point the finger back at you. Because you know in your heart many times you've cursed people too.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, now let me ask everybody a question. I know that it's a work week for a lot of people. Is anybody interested in this? Because it's, you know, Sukkot holiday, and this is, we just read this yesterday, the Book of Koheles. We actually read this in Temple yesterday, so it's a timely thing to do. And I'd be more than happy to do another a class or two over the holiday, but I'll make sure that we can all do it. So is anybody that can make it?
I think I would be able to.
Jim, you could make it. Anybody else?
Hey, what time are you talking about?
We could talk about what time, but let's put it this way. A lot of people are responding. Is there anybody that can't make it sometime this week? And the time we could get is very flexible for me, so I could do it around your schedule. Is there anybody that this week is no good during the week at all?
This is Doug. I have to travel this week, so I probably would not be able to join.
Oh,
I wouldn't let that stop you.
Are you traveling all week?
Yeah, from Monday through Friday.
Oh. You're not going to be staying put for any, like, hour period of time anywhere, a hotel or anything?
If it were in the evening, there's a possibility.
Okay.
Depending on which evening.
So what I'll do is I'll send an email out to the list, then Noah Hyde's at Masora, and I'll put some times down, and if everybody can respond and pick a time, and we'll see which time is, you know, unanimously good, all right? How's that?
Okay.
Good.
Sounds
good.
Yep.
And when are you leaving, Doug?
Monday morning.
Monday morning, okay. So, in the meantime, look at the next verse. It's starting a new area. Very interesting. All right, so the verses will be 23, 24, 25 perhaps. And if you read 26 and you're female, do not take it to heart, because you have to look at the commentaries. He says over there, and I find more bitter than death is a woman that she traps, I believe that's the word, betzodin. But there he's talking about, if you look at Rashi, immediately he says, who is this woman he's talking about? He's talking about an apikoros, somebody who's like a, goes against the rabbis, is a, you know, somebody defamer. So why does he call it a woman? Separate question. But he's not attacking a gender over here, so I just want to make it clear. Now there may be other commentaries, we'll take a look and see. And let's just see here. But I don't even think we're going to get up to that one, because there's a lot to discuss in 23 and 24 and certainly 25. All right, and
yeah, but any time after Wednesday, I don't know if you want to consider midday. After Wednesday, midday wouldn't be a consideration. It would have to be Monday, Tuesday, or
yeah, right, because Wednesday night's the holiday again.
Right.
Yeah.
So would you say like up till 12 or 1 on Wednesday?
I would leave Wednesday out of it, unless it's in the morning. Yeah, unless it's in the morning.
Okay, so the Monday and Tuesday or Wednesday morning. Okay.
All right. So I'll send the email out with some times so that I can do it, and then you have a response.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day, everybody.
Yeah, Doug, stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Dan Huxley, Matt Hedberg.